What's up, guys, and welcome to another episode of Dating Intelligence. What? Ding, ding.
Here, what's what does your beanie say?
It's Wasp. I went to a Wasp concert. I'm a rock and roll dude. Like, I love my 80s rock and roll, and this is Wasp, you know, Wasp's like that heavy metal band, you know, like Love Machine.
I've never heard of that.
Wild Child, you know, that's your stuff anyways. Maybe our guest knows his stuff anyway. So anyways, guys, welcome to another episode of Dating Intelligence. We got our lovely co-host, Jamie Villamore, who's already stepped in and making fun of my Wasp and my rock and roll lifestyle. How are you, girl?
I know, and you have a pin in your shirt.
Yeah, it's a fashion thing.
Oh, that's cool.
Not holding anything up.
I always love your outfits.
Thank you. Yeah,
so cool.
This was genius, just sticking like a safety pin. When I was in the early days of my modeling career, like I used to wear t-shirts with just like a safety pin in it.
Really?
People like, you're missing something. No, I'm not.
No, I'm not. Don't you love that about fashion though?
I do. It's whatever you want. Whatever you want to make it, right?
Yeah.
You got anything going on?
I have a lot going on.
Okay.
I'm excited. I'm hanging out here in Vegas for a couple days, of course, to like film our show, and then off to Dallas, and I have like a couple more matches that I'm excited. So up my game and the training sense, and a couple new brands that I'm working with. So I'm really excited.
Good.
And
I can't
wait
to just keep those brands alive, girl. You know, you're trying to revamp and always growing and finding new stuff. So I appreciate that.
I love it.
Yeah. I just launched my dating coach about a month ago. So now I'm an official dating coach. So you guys out in the dating intelligence space, this is where this whole podcast originated from, was just for this point right now for me to start helping others in the dating space, and it's time. And I've actually latched on to a few clients, in the first month, which I'm really excited about, and helping them not necessarily find love, just be smarter about dating in general. You know, it's like a lot of people out there just really don't know what they're doing, what they're looking for. And my job is just to just narrow it down, and just to kind of keep you on the path to finding that person, and I'm not saying that perfect match per se. I'm just saying finding that person. And this is a good segue for our guest today because he actually does stuff like narrowing people's investments down and shit like that down and then finding that perfect investment and creating that wealth. And so with that being said, our guest today definitely knows how to strike out the competition. Former baseball player and now managing partner in an investment firm called SRV Ventures. He not only committed to investing in and accelerating the most compelling startups in the world, but he also creates content that reaches over 1 million people around the world across Twitter, LinkedIn, and more. And I thought throwing a curveball was hard, dude. All right, but anyways, please welcome the multi-talented Sahil Bloom to the show. What's up, man?
What's going on? I appreciate the intro, man.
Yeah,
I feel like I need to bring you around with me more often. That's great.
You know, I'll be in your back pocket. Some people just take the intro and just record it and just walk it around as after. You know, everybody needs a... Do you have a walking song, by the way?
No, but you're my walking song when I'm on the red carpet.
I mean, your guys' intro for this podcast is incredible.
Oh,
the whole hype
you.
Track there. Yeah. I was like, that's pretty elite.
It was Jamie's idea.
That's
so
good.
Do you think
that's
worth something, by the way?
I think it's worth
something.
I think so.
Should we put a price on that?
I don't know.
I'm not asking you.
Do you guys have it on? Do you have it running on repeat on your big screens in your houses and stuff?
Home
and hype yourself up in the morning?
Right?
I would. I probably would. You get up, like the alarm goes off at 4:30 and you get up to that, kind of get a little blood pumping.
Well, thank you to Ashba for giving us the track, first of all. It's Hypnotic by him. So shout out to him real fast. Ashba's doing his thing in the guitar GDM space right now. So
love
he
it.
Is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, how are you? You good?
I'm good, man. I'm happy to be out here. I thought it was warmer in Vegas. Mm-hmm. Not going to lie. Came from New York, flew in this morning. It was nicer in New York than it was in Vegas. I don't know what the hell is going on out here. So I'm a little bummed about that. I thought I was going to get some pool time out at the casino.
Go home tan.
Yeah. I know. None of that.
You know that thing where you just go somewhere and that's where your mindset is right now? I thought I'd get some pool time. You're sometimes like, fuck it, I'm going to jump in the pool anyways. I don't care if it's snowing, it's raining. Your mind says, I'm here to do that only and I'm going to do it. Even if it's for 2 seconds.
I'm big on the cold plunge.
Okay.
I'm like big on this train now. And so I do that every single morning. So this morning before leaving New York, I went and got in my cold plunge. And it was like 35 degrees out in New York this morning. Real cold. I get here. It's pretty similar, actually. I might be able to go do that in the pool. So no big difference. We're good.
All right. Well, you know what? Before we get into, because I want to talk about your baseball and your venture capitalism and all that stuff like that and what you're doing specifically. But I read something on you doing your research, which I completely made me think a lot, like about you being in Florida. Am I right? With your wife. Mm-hmm. And then moving
or are you in New York?
No, hold on. That's where I'm going. That's
okay.
The segue. Like, and you moving to New York because you wanted to be close to your parents.
Yeah.
And something you said resonated. It's just like, I don't see my dad and my mom's past, but you're really thinking about, you see them once a year in theory, which most of us do. And all of a sudden you really put the plague on, you only have 15 years left now with those people. And I was like, my mind just went like, holy shit. It made me think.
I mean, this was a conversation in May 2021 that completely changed my life, changed the trajectory of my entire life. I was living in California at the time, not Florida, and I had gone to school out there. You know, I played baseball growing up, so I got a baseball scholarship, moved out to California. I had grown up in Boston. Family was all there. My wife's family was from there. Moved to California. We got married. She moved out. We were living like the California dream, right? It's like warm, sunny, everything's good. And life just has this way of accelerating. Like, you get on a path, and especially in traditional work, you spend like a couple of years, the gravity starts building to just stay in that career track. You keep working there. And it had been 7 years and I had kind of blinked and that time had gone by.
Okay.
COVID hit. And for a lot of us, started thinking about what the hell we actually wanted in our life. Like, it was the first time we had this like, pause. You can start thinking about the world. And I had a conversation with a friend. I was kind of, you know, at the time, like, pretty stressed out. I was like overweight. I wasn't able to work out the way I wanted to because I was just working in a life, you know, building a life that wasn't mine.
It becomes a loop.
Yeah. You wake up, go to bed. I mean, you do the same thing over and over again. My friends, I wasn't able to spend time with my wife. I wasn't present with her because I was stressed all the time. And I had a conversation with a friend over a couple drinks and he said to me like, you know, how's life? And I said, well, you know, I don't see my family often. I don't see my parents. I'd been really close with them growing up. And he said, how old are they? I said, you know, 65 years old. He's like, well, how often do you see them? I said, once a year. He said, all right, so you're going to see them 15 times before they die. And I was like, I got a fucking punch to the gut.
Right.
I mean, and he wasn't trying to be a dick. He wasn't trying to be an asshole. It's just math.
Yeah.
Like your parents are going to live until they're about 80, right? And I was seeing them once a year, 15 more years. And it was terrifying. And so that next day, I actually talked to my wife and said, hey, I want to move back to the East Coast. Within 45 days, we had sold our house in California, bought a house on the East Coast, and come back East. And it's been the best decision. I mean, when I walked in here, you were like, you seem really happy.
Yeah.
I felt like that for the last 2 years since we moved back East. It's just like life just feels so much better when you align those kind of big values.
Right.
And man, special, special change.
I appreciate, first of all, I appreciate that you did that, because once again, when I read that, just doing the research, it made me stop in my tracks and just go and really think about that. It's just like 15 more times. And my dad, you know, my stepmom, you know, he's 78 now. So it's like, it's less than that.
Yeah.
And I haven't, you know, it's like, and like you said, it's once a year usually when that happens. And I'm just like, that's like 5 years left in theory almost now. So it's just so, it makes me rethink all that now.
I mean, this is
still won't move there.
Yeah.
But it'll make me rethink
a lot of
it.
It makes you be more present in those moments when you are there. Yes, which it's easy to just be like, ah, fuck, Thanksgiving, like, family coming together, stressful, whatever. And you just let those moments go past. You're like, I can't wait until I can just go back home. It's so stressful with family. But it makes you appreciate those moments more when you realize how few there are remaining. I mean, this is my biggest fear in life is unexpressed love. It's like the idea that we can die with all of this pent up love that we didn't express to the people around us. And for me personally, I don't express love well. This is like one of my biggest challenges in the world. I write about love well. I talk about it well, but I don't think I express love well to the people that I really care about. I think there are a lot of people out there who, in my mind, I say, yeah, I love them. Of course I love them. And they must know that. But if I don't show it to them, if I'm not taking actions that actually show that, they might not experience the fact that I love them. My mom has said that to me recently, like asking me like, oh, you know, do you love me? Whatever, kind of joking, but kind of serious. And it's so obvious to me in my mind. Yeah, of course I love my mom. She's like one of the most important people in the world to me. But if I don't show those actions, that's unexpressed love that at the end of the day, what happened? It's gone.
So tell me some things that you can do, like for instance, with your mom that shows or that you can express love.
I think you need to learn to express love in a way that the other person understands it.
Yeah,
it's like that whole idea of love languages.
Yep.
Yeah.
You guys know all about this. I'm sure you've talked about it before. My wife is a perfect example of this. She experiences love through touch.
Okay.
That's her love language.
Touch. Yeah.
Physical touch. I don't experience love at all that way. It's
really?
Like, for me, it's
so
like,
so if she reaches over and grabs your hand while you're driving, rubs your back or your head.
Whereas he won't do that.
Feels nice, maybe. And like, you know, there's like a sexual intimacy to that.
Yeah.
Sure. But I don't experience love that way in the sense that like, it's not my first reaction to go touch.
Okay.
If I'm going to show love, I'm an acts of service guy. Like I like to be able to show love through like this morning when I'm leaving, I like took the trash out and put it out and like did something that I didn't necessarily have to do. And that was like an act of service, an act of love. But she's not going to feel that and say like, wow, oh my God, amazing. She needs me to just hug her at the end of a day.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And my problem is I'm bad at just like thinking about that moment to moment and giving the person what they need in that way. And so stepping back, becoming aware of that And then actually going and taking the steps to do those things. Like my mom just needs me to tell her that I love her.
She needs the affirmation.
She needs me to just text her on a random Tuesday night and just say, hey, mom, thinking about you.
I love that.
You know what's like an interesting dynamic that he brings up that I just now kind of clicked for me is I guess we kind of need different things from different partners in our different relationships in our life. Because for me, I would want like physical touch from my partner because that's how like I express love and what I like. But for my kids, it's completely different. Like I want the text, a random text that says, hey mom, I love you. Because I'll get butt hurt and I'm like, I haven't heard from you guys all day. You don't love me. Like, what are you doing? And they're like, get off my back. It's been 12 hours.
Right.
But
it is interesting to think about, you know, do we all need all of the types of love? And it's just who you get it from in different areas of your life. Because it's impossible to think that you're going to get all these types of love from one person.
Correct.
It just doesn't exist, right? Like they're not going to experience
it would be a little boring.
It would be exhausting.
Yeah. Yes.
Exhausting.
Like, is your wife going to want physical touch when she's 80? I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
We don't really know. So maybe that dynamic changes over time as we evolve and grow.
I mean, I'm a huge believer in like seasons to our lives and that things change and what you need. And it's the same idea of like, a person that fits and was amazing for you in one season of your life might not be the right person for that next season of your life. And sometimes some of the worst heartaches in life come from trying to jam someone who was great in one season into the next season or into another one. It's rare. You know, you might have 3 or 4 or 5 people in your entire life who fit into all of the seasons.
Right.
Like your parents, if you're lucky enough to find and choose a partner, that person maybe fits into all the seasons. But other than that, there aren't many.
No, you're right about that. It's just dawned on me on that one. The funny story, it's like, well, not really funny, but when my mom and dad were split, my youngest sister, at a certain point in time in her life, my dad was like acts of, you know, he was gifts. That was his thing for us. Always gifts when he was around, gifts. And then one day she just looks at him, she goes, I don't want anything. And my older sister and I are like, what are you, nuts? Like, well, this is like Christmas around. Grab.
You're in the store.
It's like the 10-minute grab, you know, in the supermarket sweep or something. And it's like, she just looks, she goes, I just want you to give me a hug. That's all I want. And it just stops in our track. But her acts of whatever changed. It went from gifts to I need physical touch. I need love. And so he went over and gave her the hug. And so obviously she doesn't get shit anymore. You know, we still super, no, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
But I like the fact that you're right though. It's the seasons change all the time and it's always different. And that one person like yourself from your kids, the next time you might want those hugs instead of just the affirmation. Cause they're going to be, you know.
So one of my kids is extremely like affectionate and lovey. And the other one is the opposite. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how are you my child? Because I'm such a lover and affectionate and a toucher. But it drives her nuts, and I totally lost my train of thought.
I mean, you like, go also, you also go to like different ends of the spectrum. One of the challenges with my mom, which I've talked to her about recently, is she, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most emotional you can possibly be as a human, she's like a 9, 9.5, right? Like she's Indian, she grew up in India, moved away from her family when she was 18, met my dad, who's a white Jewish guy, when they were both at Princeton, and they fell in love like over a 2-week period that they happened to cross over at Princeton. And they met in a library and fell in love. And like his family didn't accept it, disowned him for wanting to marry mom. Like just a crazy, crazy story of love coming together. Point being, my mom is extremely, extremely emotional. And I would say on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm probably like a 2, 2.5 give myself credit.
Got
in
it.
Terms of like my base emotional state, I normally am very even keel. It's like something I pride myself on. And so when my mom expresses herself on that far end of the spectrum, I almost like withdraw into a shell sometimes in order to try to balance her out. Like that's my natural reaction because it feels uncomfortable to me to open up to that 9.5. And then she perceives that as me being like, you know, non-responsive to her emotional inquiries. And that's a real challenge. I think people face that in relationships a lot, in intimate relationships. It's like a huge, huge issue if you're in that kind of imbalanced state.
But like, so what do you do with that?
I've had to talk to her about it. I mean, it was like a real issue in our relationship, frankly, for many years, was she just perceived me as like, oh, you don't love me because you're not, you know, crying with me in this emotional moment or whatever it is. And I had to explain to her like, Mom, I love you so, so much, but this just isn't how I experience my own emotions mm-hmm. during the course of the day. You, like, I'm going to experience them very differently, and I withdraw when you're going really far to that end, because I'm naturally, I think in my mind, I'm like fighting to try to balance it because it makes me uncomfortable.
Right.
Got it.
I mean, let's just be honest. It's hard to find that compromise balance. Like you said, if you got, it was a point of contention for a while, even after you expressed it, mm-hmm. you know, now you don't want to hurt their feelings. You don't want to make them feel like, you know, when they go the opposite, I'll go, well, fine, I'll never give you a hug again.
Yeah.
Or fine, when they do that whole thing, you're like, no, I wasn't saying that. I just, let's find that middle ground.
That's what I tell my daughter. The hugs aren't for you. They're for me.
Okay.
That's a good way of thinking about it though.
Or you just force it upon them.
I mean, it is.
And then I tackle her.
Yeah. I mean, that's what my wife is going to start doing probably, honestly. Yeah. I mean, this is the reason why I think self-awareness is like the ultimate unlock for all of life. Because we're never going to fully change the way we are. I'm never going to become a 9.5 on an emotion spectrum.
Right.
But if I'm self-aware of the fact that I'm a 2 and my mom's a 9, I can probably start to bridge that gap a little bit more and also make her understand where I am on the spectrum so that we can actually communicate a little more effectively.
Okay.
I think that if you were to do one thing as a human being to try to make yourself better, it's to just become more self-aware of where you are on all of these spectrums and what your love language is and how you experience these things.
Okay, so I'm going to go off that because you talked about your mom and you said, you know, one thing that your fear is not expressing enough love. So how do you do that to your friends? How do you do that to others? Not talking your wife only. Mm-hmm. When you're with someone, you know, hey, I should be a little more of this. Are you more aware of that now?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, so much more aware. For me, it's with presence. With friends in particular, for the first 7-ish years of my career, right? When I was kind of going down the mainstream finance path, I like was working 90-100 hours a week, mm-hmm. traveling all the time. I was, you know, I was in the like the classic thing of you're constantly stressed, but you don't know why. There's like some email that you feel like you're missing, or there's something that you're stressed about and you don't know what it is, but you're just like, your heart is just pumping the whole time. And so then you're sitting down with a friend, and when you're supposed to be catching up or listening to what they're saying, you're actually just sitting there being like, holy shit, what am I missing? What am I missing? What's the email? Who needs me right now? Whatever it is. It's like hallucination. I mean, you're not there in the moment. Mm-hmm. So now what I'm really, really trying to be more cognizant of, more deliberate about, is really being present with friends. And for me, that's like, I hate group dinners. I don't like going out with like 5 people. I like going out one-on-one with a friend.
I'm the same way.
And just being like, hey, let's have a conversation.
Yes.
I want to hear about your life. I want to talk about things. Like, what are you excited about right now? What are the things that are changing in your world? And doing that, I think, makes all the difference for me personally.
Right. And it doesn't, and I love that you say that because it's not about the amount of time you spend with the person. It's the quality. It's the amount of quality time you spend.
Yes.
I mean, time versus energy.
Mm-hmm.
Time versus energy, I think, is the biggest separation that we all need to understand.
Right.
I used to think that time was all that mattered, right? I was like, oh, I spent an hour with my wife. That's great. I spent an hour with my wife. But if you weren't there, like if you were on your phone or if you were watching TV mm-hmm. or you were checking email, 1 hour of time is nothing. There was zero energy that was put into it. So when you're spending time with people, it's not about the time, it's about the energy that you're putting into it.
Yeah.
10 minutes of like
energy
and truly being there with that person is worth so much more than an hour of being, you know, up in the clouds.
I love that.
I do too.
The energy, that's like huge and key. Because sometimes I just want like my guy by me, like we don't have to be doing anything, mm-hmm. but I want to know that he's close by just so I can like go kiss him or like touch him while I work on my stuff and you work on yours. So that's like important.
I love
too.
That too, by the way. Yeah. But like I said, there's different aspects and different levels of all that you said, you know. I had a friend, he gave me the best compliment the other day. Like I was just driving, leaving a lesson, and I was like, let me call, you know, it was my college buddy. And I go, let me call. I had spoken to him a few years and I just randomly called him. He picks up. We spoke on the phone for 20 minutes. After the conversation, he texted me about 15 minutes later. He goes, that call made my day. I am smiling from ear to ear. And this is what he said. He goes, I don't know where the day is going to take me, but all I know is I'm happier in the moment right now. And I just was like, wow, just me calling out of the blue, expressing my love for him and just, hey, I miss you, let's catch up and da da da. That made it made my day obvious as well. But that quality moment, I do that all the time, by the way. It's just reaching out.
He's really good at that.
Right.
I mean, it's crazy.
And that's why
that
I asked you, you know, how are you doing that now with others? Because if I think about them, I call them.
Yeah.
Right away.
I mean, and think about the ripple effects of that too, mm-hmm. like more broadly. Like cosmically, I'm not like a huge like cosmos and universe energy person. I sort of believe in it. And the reason I believe in it is because of what you just did right there, right? Like you called him, you took 2 minutes and you called him. He's in a much better mood all
of
a sudden.
For the rest
of
the time,
And then all the interactions he has during the course of the day, who did he call later? Because you called him. maybe he called his mom. Maybe his mom then like did something nice for someone else. And think about the ripple effects that you set off by just deciding in that one moment that you're going to call your friend for 2 minutes, that you're going to be present because you're on a drive and you're like, oh, I could either sit here and listen to a podcast or the radio, or I can call an old friend and catch up. I mean, that is like an unbelievable, unbelievable thing that you can do so, so quickly.
Yeah. Right. Love that. I think that's a great way of expressing stuff. So, well, I'm glad you're on your path. And I appreciate you sharing the fact that, you know, your one fear is like not expressing your love before you pass on. But, you know, you could go today, you know? And so I appreciate that because that is a big thing though. It's a lot of people, you know, we all get in our space. We all get into our personal shit. And we're just like, you know, like, especially when you're sitting right here next to me and it's just like, I'm in my shit, but I'm not really spending any time with you.
Yeah. I mean, the time versus energy thing is important in anything you do too. I mean, you were talking about your training right now and getting into your training. Like, everyone is struggling with a lack of time right now. That's like something everyone complains about. Everyone says, oh, I'm so busy. I don't have time to do all these different things. And it's really an energy. It's like it's a focus thing. It's not really time. I mean, if you go to the gym and you spend an hour in the gym, but you're on your phone, you're checking Instagram the whole time. You're like on Twitter. I mean, I do that sometimes. You get nothing out of it.
Yeah.
But if you go for 15 minutes and you are really there and in it, think about the impact you can have. It's like all of a sudden that one unit of input that you put into this thing is creating 10 units of output versus one to one. And that applies to everything. It applies to your work. It applies to things you're working on, you know, whatever, relationships. It's like, it's so, so common across everything you look at in life.
Love that.
And so I think that framework in general just applies broadly and is useful.
Okay. Well, let's get into this. Let's get into a segue to this broad and usefulness here. So guys, we have Sahil Bloom on the show. He's just a financial genius. I'm just going to call you that for today. All right.
I'm far from it, by the way. I have no idea.
You know, at your young age, in my eyes, you're a financial genius. Okay. So today's episode, guys, we're going to call it Funding Your Future, Making Plans in Your Relationship to Be Financially and Independently Wealthy for Your Family and Future. Mm-hmm. So at your age right now, and with your, I mean, you're in a very good energy space right now. So what do you suggest to people? And I know you do a lot more companies and get all these startups and things like that, but how do you tell someone individually what they need to do in the short roundabout way of what to do in order to make yourself financially stable for your life?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big believer in boring basics. And this isn't like ever going to be the sexy answer. I mean, like my fundamental belief with anything you're pursuing in life is that there's like 2, 3%, 5% of the solutions out there that will basically create all of the impact. But all you're being sold is like this long tail of a bunch of nonsense.
Okay.
Because it's sexy. Like people love to sell you this sexy solution. They're like, oh, here's this complex financial thing that you can do and make all these trades and hire me to do it for you, by the way. Pay me to do it for you. And the reality is like for most people, saving a little more, investing every single month, automating things in your expenses, managing a little bit more carefully will do the trick.
Okay.
And that's just the reality is like there's all of this complexity that people try to put into the world. And it's usually just because they're trying to make a buck off of you. And that applies to financial stuff. It applies to your health. Like everyone wants to sell you the like, you know, ab zapper that'll like zap your abs into six pack submission. Like, I swear you're going to have a six pack if you put on this like thing that actually legitimately shocks you.
Right.
And I mean, that's stuff that people are buying. It's like the as seen on TV entire industry is created around that. But the reality is like, eating whole unprocessed foods and moving for 30 minutes a day and sleeping 7-8 hours a night will probably get you like 95% of the benefit in your health.
All right.
But that's not sexy. I can't sell you like an ebook about that, right? Like,
I mean, let's just be honest. It's not the Thighmaster or the George Foreman grill. I mean, come on. Those
the boring basics go a long, long way. And for me personally, I don't have anything to sell people. And so that's the benefit. You know, I'm not trying to sell a course about financial management. I'm not selling financial products to people. I'm not trying to sell fitness products to people. I just want to impact lives. And so when I'm writing content, when I'm sharing things, it's all about that. It's like, what are these boring basics that will get you a long, long way in your life? And I, you know, it applies to financial stuff sometimes, and sometimes it just applies to life. I mean, you and I connected originally over like something that I posted on Instagram that was just around general life principles, ways that I think people can live a healthier and wealthier life. And when I say wealthier, I mean comprehensively wealthy, you know, beyond just money. So that's how I think about the world. I mean, I generally am just in favor of like stripping away complexity and get back to the like boring stuff that no one wants to talk about.
Got it.
So how do you make money?
Personally?
Yes.
A few ways, I guess. Okay. So I have I think of it as like three pillars to what I do. You know, I have all the media stuff, which is, you know, my Twitter, I thought we were getting paused. No, so I have three kind of pillars. So I have my media stuff, which is, you know, Twitter and newsletter, which is a pretty big kind of money driver for me. It, you know, reaches almost 300,000 people today and sponsors, et cetera. All the stuff around that. I have a book that's coming out, you know, hopefully a year from now, we'll see. So book deal around all that. Then I have my fund, which you mentioned. Mm-hmm. I have a venture investing fund, which is a $10 million fund. I invest in like early stage technology startups. That's more of like a long-term kind of wealth creation vehicle. And then I have a holding company that owns today six cash flowing businesses, all have CEOs and operators. So I'm not really involved in them day to day. But my holding company owns a either majority or a significant minority stake in all of those.
That's great.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I've generally just thought about like, how can I separate my time from the actual outputs and financial outputs that are being created? Whereas my prior role and, you know, working in finance was like very tied to how much time I was spending in it day to day. I was working 90, 100 hours a week. Now, you know, if I work 10 hours one week, I'm still going to make just as much money as if I worked 50.
Yeah,
and so that's like a pretty,
That's great. Yeah.
In all those areas.
Yeah.
You're working smart.
Yeah. No, trying to, at least trying to.
That's amazing.
You have to work hard at some point in your life in order to get to work smart. Like everyone's big on the whole thing now of like, oh, working hard's overrated. And I think that's bullshit. Like I worked really hard in order to get to where I am because it allowed me to see the whole playing field. It's sort of like, did you play video games growing up?
Yeah.
Either one of you guys?
Yeah.
There were those video games where you'd kind of start on a map and you'd be like, it would be all black on the map and you were in the one spot you could see and you had to kind of explore around in order to like
open
add light
up
to the map and be able to see it. And I think the early part of your career is that. It's like you're in the black, you're in the one spot that has light, and you need to kind of like meander around, say yes to things, work really hard in order to put light on the whole map.
Yes.
And then when you do that, now you know like where's the gold in this map? And now I can work smart and just focus on that one area. But if I didn't go explore and work hard and say yes to all that shit, how am I supposed to? I don't know where the gold is.
Right.
Yeah.
And also he's leaving out one simple formula to people. You can't be afraid to try and expand that horizon, because if you sit in that space, that darkness will always be there.
Yeah.
There's
don't
a
be
lot
afraid
of,
to fail.
That's the thing. So many people are just stuck and just because they're afraid of what's out there. But like you said, if you just get out there, look at you now. I mean,
you guys both come from athlete backgrounds and athletes understand failure as, you know, a training mechanism better
than anyone in
the world.
I'm failing now sitting here, Sahil. I'm failing now.
No,
okay?
I mean,
I haven't worked out today.
But you understand from the get-go in your life that failure is just learning. You're gathering data points all along the way. It's funny that people fear failure actually as adults too, because I have a 10-month-old at home right now. And it's so interesting observing him right now because he's learning to walk. And you watch him and he's walking and the dude literally falls flat on his face like 5-10 times a day right now, like conk, and you hear his head hit and you're like, oh my God, what happened? Or he like falls flat on his face and he's crying, but he's getting back up every single time. It's not like he just decides, oh, walking's not for me, I'm not gonna walk because
because
I failed. And so when you're a baby or when you're a kid, like your natural state is to embrace failure, learn from it. Like, okay, what did I screw up that, you know, I like crossed my feet and that led to me falling. And now he's learning not to do that. And somewhere along the way, people start getting scared of that.
Yeah.
They're like, oh shit, people are gonna judge me. This is gonna be embarrassing if I fail. But like a baby doesn't do that. And so why do we all of a sudden decide that failure is such a bad thing at some point in our lives? I mean, 95% of people just get terrified of failure. And so then they limit their potential the road.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I have to push to failure because that's how I get better.
Yeah.
So if I like, for example, in my shooting, if I go shoot a stage and I'm shooting all alphas, that's not going to get me better. So I'm going to push to failure. So like I am missing and then like I hone back a little.
Mm. Right.
But
I
got to go faster.
It's in your DNA though too. You know, I feel like sometimes it's in people's DNA and it's like you see only success and that failure or that fear just pushes you to go exactly where you need to be.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, there's two pieces to it in my mind. There's a lot of people who have never failed their whole life and they get into the workforce or they get to their first point of failure in their life and they crumble because they just don't know how to do it. I mean, we used to hire some of the most high performing people I've ever seen in my life at my prior job, like, you know, 4.2 GPAs from like Harvard, Stanford, wherever, like smartest. I can't even imagine having a resume like that, like crushed all their interviews, perfect SATs, all these things. They'd get in and screw their first thing up and literally crumble. Like you give some feedback and they would crumble. And you wonder, like, how does that happen? It's because they've never failed in their life. And so they haven't had that, like, punch in the face moment where you had to just get yourself back up and do the thing. It was like, it was like a shocking, shocking moment for them. The other thing to consider is fear is a paradox. I call it the paradox of fear, which is the things that you are afraid of are also the things you probably most need to do.
That's, I love that one.
And you and I have talked about this, mm-hmm. I think, at times in DMs in the past, is like, you know, the stuff you're afraid of is what you need to run towards. Like, yes. You said you were afraid of certain things and now you're doing more of them. And it's like you realize that that is where growth is for you. And you understand that intrinsically. Most people don't.
Yeah.
And so what a huge
that's
unlock.
That's where I need to be. Like, yeah, he's talking about like the hikes because I'm afraid of heights.
Okay.
The ocean. I've always had a huge fear of the ocean. So now I'm like diving and lobstering.
Yeah, we're very similar with things like that as well, too, like heights and ocean
but
for
this
me
is,
as well.
Yeah, but these are the things that make us better in life, and they roll over into other things. The cold plunge, I was like, this is the most ridiculous thing ever. Who wants to torture themselves and hop in there? And now that's what I'm doing every morning. So it's like getting comfortable, being uncomfortable, and doing the hard things.
I
appreciate that.
Yeah, you make a rule to just run towards things you're afraid of.
Like, get in there. And then when we get out, it's like, wow, I did that.
And once you're in it,
it's not so bad.
Yeah, and once you're in it, you realize, like, the hardest part was just getting in.
Yeah.
It wasn't actually being in it. I mean, I say that all the time about my cold. My cold plunge sits on my deck that's off our master bedroom on the second floor. And I go in at, like, I don't know, 4:30 in the morning. I wake up really early and I go in first thing. It's pitch black out. Like, I never want to do it. It's not like I get, people are like, oh, well, it gets easy after a while.
No,
it never gets easy.
Never.
I freaking hate it.
Me too.
Hate it. And the worst part of it every single time is opening the door to just go outside. It's not like being in it that's so bad. It's not like even putting my foot into it. It's literally just opening the door to like convince myself to, because it's cold outside, and like to go outside. Mm-hmm. But once you're outside, it's not so bad and you're in it. And so the lesson there is you need to just figure out what that little bit of movement is that you can create. Because once you create that, you're not gonna stop.
Right.
It's like,
but how many times do we do that time and time and time again with the same thing you're talking about?
But
you know you're gonna do it every day. When are we gonna
you still fight it?
I'm getting in that pool today, that pole plunge.
But
it's the mind just always like,
you gotta find the ways where like the little hacks where you can get yourself around those mental hurdles. Like for waking up, the one that I started doing, I hated waking up early when I was like, I was not a morning person and I wanted to become one because I like needed to for work originally. And then I just started more, I wanted to be more into it. I hated getting up in the morning. And so my alarm would go off and I would hit snooze. Like you'd be half asleep and you're just like, oh, it's so, you start telling yourself, I don't need to wake up right now. This is dumb. You know, I could sleep another 30 minutes, whatever. And so you press snooze 3 times and then all of a sudden you're not waking up early. So what I started doing was I just started putting my phone in the bathroom.
Smart.
That's what I do.
Yeah. And it's brilliant because it's a tiny thing. You get to do it the night before when you have motivation because you're like, yeah, I'm a morning person. You're going to bed. And so you do it then. And now you have to get up. You got to walk 20 feet to go turn the fucking alarm off.
It's going to annoy the shit
out of you. You're not
going
to go back to bed after that.
No,
because then you're telling yourself, like, no, I'm a loser if I get back into bed now that I'm up. I already did this. I already did the hard part, which is putting my feet on the floor. So you have to like find those little hacks that allow you to get around your like natural mental gymnastics that you're trying to do.
Yeah.
Love that.
Atomic Habit talks a lot about that with like habit stacking and like you want to drink more water, then put your water in places where you're going to see
Make
it.
Make it easy. Make it easy.
It's like, it's like a mind fuck all
sometimes when I get in the cold plunge, like I'm like, oh, this, I can do an extra 2 minutes today. Do you ever feel like that?
Yeah. And but then I feel like that's okay though, because at least you're already in it challenging yourself with that same challenge that you were already fighting in the first place.
But it's weird then sometimes my mind is just like, how much longer?
Right.
But then other days I just crush it. I wonder why that
is. Yeah, I think that setting, when you know the amount of time that you're going in before you get in, it ends up being really hard on those days for me.
Okay.
I'll have a watch on and say I'm like going in. I normally try to go in for 3 to 7 minutes every day. And if I like come in and I'm like, all right, 3 minutes and I set it and I get in, I'm sitting there like from 2 minutes and down, I'm just like, okay, has it been 3 minutes yet? Has it been 3 minutes yet? If I get in with like no time set and I'm just like, hey, I'm just going to go in and I'm going to like play a song, a random song, whatever. And when the song ends, I'll get out. I don't know how long the song is going to be. Just play a random one. Then I'm not thinking about it because I didn't set the terms of what I was going to do. I find that to be like,
oh my God, I love
approach.
That.
I do too.
You just inspired me because I always say when people ask questions, I'm like, or what is your 5-year goal? I'm like, why would I ever set limitations on myself? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can do whatever I want. So for now on, I'm not going to set a time for me. I'm just going to set the timer and see. And when I get out, some days maybe, who knows, I'll do 7 minutes and some days.
Right, exactly.
I'm going to try that.
Try
that. What a great idea.
I think it's a fantastic idea. All right, so I know, I wish we could. I know where I'm sorry. It's we're out of time shortly today, but you're freaking on point.
So, and I know you're so far, so it's not like it's easy.
I will be back. I'll come back with, I'll bring my book next time whenever it's out. I'll come back. We'll do it.
We got to get into your relationship. We got to get into a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. You guys were high school sweethearts.
Yes.
This guy has a child.
You guys, check out Sahil Bloom stuff on Twitter. What is your biggest traffic area that you want people to drive the people to at this moment?
I mean, Instagram. Instagram would be best for me.
Okay, and let them know where to find you on Instagram, by the way.
It's at Sahil Bloom on Instagram, just my name. Okay. The benefit of having a weird name is that you can just get your handle. It's
He's
easy.
Like, score. Yeah. Got it. No one has that one. All right, and Jamie, and thank you. By the way, Sahil, thank you so much, guys. Yeah. We have Sahil Bloom on. You're a fantastic guest today, and I know we're out of time today, but if you want to leave, what's one thing that you want to let people know before you leave today?
Oh, man.
The takeaway for today. Just pick something.
Just find those moments to pause and appreciate the present.
Love
Slow
that.
Down.
Right.
Time versus energy.
Yeah. Love it. All right, Jamie.
Yeah. Why are you looking at me like
that? I love you, honey.
You know what? We wore black all day today. What is wrong?
Yeah, I didn't get the memo.
Yeah, we have a tendency to dress like all the time.
We don't plan it, but we just end up always matching. It's fucking weird.
It is kind of weird, but we're in sync. We're always in sync.
Subconscious is good.
It's so good to meet you.
It's so nice to meet you. Yeah. And guys, once again, Sahil Bloom, look at his stuff. Read his stuff.
I mean, like I said,
you're going to get captivated from what he does. And all of a sudden you're going to be just a follower. I started subscribing to you just off of that, you know, moving home with the parents thing just had me sold. So, and guys, please follow us at Dating Intelligence, anything on social media, and please listen and subscribe on all social, I'm sorry, on YouTube, all our podcasts have Apple, Spotify, everything.
Yes.
So.
And if you want to see us bring this guest back, send us some questions, send us some feedback.
Yes.
So we can have a whole list for him.
A whole list. All right,
I'm
guys.
Looking forward to
that's another episode. And thanks once again for joining today.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
That was awesome, guys.
Holy shit. The time
crunch.
Flew.
Yeah, that was